The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Now, just we were asking for advice for the woman who feels she might cry when dropping her child off to school for the first time this week. Tell that woman to cop on and to stop looking for attention. For generations, kids have gone to school. This new thing with parents standing around the yard and crying is embarrassing. a lot of sympathy there. Tell that lady who feels she might cry at the school gates, embrace all moments. Crying's only one emotion. After all, you created this child. Emotions are what we are. My baby girl is getting married at 33. I cried through it all, and she is still one great human being. And as a teacher, I can say 90% or more of anxious children have anxious parents. They can't cope with them at home and think the teacher can't either. They don't prepare children for starting school. One mother left so lonely at home, she kept the child at home for another year. Get over it! And there's another one. And then there's more on that. Oh, and tattoos. I have a few tattoos. I'm 60 now. In the last 7 years, I've had 4 grandchildren's names and dates of birth on my chest. I hope my 2 girls have no more. I'm running out of room. That's Liam, who's running out of room on his chest for new tattoos. Colin Stafford Johnson joins us in studio. Good afternoon, Colin.
Good afternoon, Ray. How are you?
You're an Emmy-winning wildlife cameraman.
That was a while ago.
I know
they still drag it out, yeah. But that's the way it is.
And when we were up in Cavan, you came in and we had a brief chat about the wildlife that you would encounter when you're on the Shannon River and around the lakes of Cavan. And you told us that you were putting on a show called The Wild Atlantic Journey. And I said, come in and chat more to us. And you're here.
You did.
So I invited and you honoured that invitation. So here we are. So it starts in Bray, and it's a one-man show with, well, not really, because there's loads of animals in it.
Exactly. Lots of animals. Yeah, I did it for the first time a couple of years ago. And started in the Mermaid Theatre in Bray. It was a really nice venue. And, you know, I had no idea how it was going to work, how many people actually come to a wildlife talk. And I thought it might be a bit of an ask, you know. But anyway, it actually, lots of people turned up. I was very pleasantly surprised. You could tell some people were dragged along by partners. But it was quite fun afterwards. They come up and say, you know.
How do you spot them?
Oh, sort of arms folded and
yes,
sort of.
Yes, yeah.
But, to be fair, an awful lot of them came up and said, you know, they had no idea what to expect, but they really enjoyed it.
Okay. So you have a huge back catalogue, for want of a better word, a huge portfolio, and you delve into that.
Exactly. So I made a series for RTÉ years ago called Living the Wildlife. I made 50 episodes of that show. A lot of those ended up being filmed along the west coast of Ireland. Then I made a series for the BBC called Wild Ireland, Edge of the World, about a Curragh journey up the west coast. And so I just have a lot of experience of that place.
Yeah.
Feel close to it, live in the west of Ireland, live in Westport, feel very lucky to live there.
Yeah.
So it shows, you know, experiences behind the sort of stories behind some of the scenes, and then the animals themselves, how to find them, where to track them down. You know, if you want to go and see a whale or a basking shark or a, you know, great sea, all these great places that you can actually go and see, but people don't seem to realise that they can do it for themselves. And so that'll be part of it, giving away lots of information and tips as well, you know. Mm-hmm. You want to see a humpback breaching, or you want to see a best place to see basking sharks, or you want to go and see an otter or whatever it is, try and point you in the right direction and how to go about it too.
So is it all video or a combination of videos and photographs?
Mostly this year, yeah, it's going to be mostly videos, actually, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, clips very much. Yeah, that's what I sort of am, I suppose.
Yes,
and, you know, the whole thing, people over the years say, why don't you have more stills? It's such a different sort of headspace and you're busy. You know the way you're employed to do a job, and that's cameraman. And to go and once you grab a stills camera, you're not actually working any longer, you're doing something else.
And with digital, can you not take grabs from the video? You can.
Well, you can a certain amount.
But they're getting
better all the time.
Are they? Yes.
Yeah,
the quality's getting better.
The grabs for me are pretty good because they sort of blur me up a little bit. They sort of do me. But much better than this high def stuff. So,
yeah. I better tell people where you are because it is all over the country. You start in Bray, you say, the Mermaid Arts Centre, then Burr, Kilkenny, Waterford, Ballymaloe, Strabane, Killarney, Westport, Athlone, Carlow, the Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary, the Hawkswell Theatre in Sligo, Newton Abbey Theatre, Newbridge, the Riverbank there, Ennis in the Dlore, or it's just Dlore, it's not Dead Dlore, it's Dlore, and Galway Town Hall. And you can find out more on your Facebook. at C Stafford Johnson. That's your Facebook page. There, we were talking before we came on. I was watching Greta Thunberg's TED Talk recently, and she was saying that is it 100 or 200 species a day are going extinct because of what man is doing to planet Earth?
The statistics, yeah, who knows? There is something equally staggering, equally shocking. The fact that anything we accept extinction at all, and when it gets down to dozens or hundreds a day, who knows? But, you know, when you have a rainforest burning. Now, I've been to lots of those places. I've been in the rainforest canopy in the Amazon at dawn, and I can tell you there's no place else in the world quite like it. That sense, it really feels like a Garden of Eden, a sort of the first sort of days of creation. That sense you've had as a kid.
It's lush.
Lush and what green. The sounds, laden heavy air, you know, laden with these heavy scented flowers, the sounds of birds flying overhead. I remember being in the tree at dawn for a couple of weeks waiting for these Wakari monkeys to turn up. And it was tough, it was hard, you know, in the heat all day long and that sort of thing. But these macaws were landing all around me in the canopy, and these seed pods were exploding, these Amazon parrots were coming in and taking the seeds. It was just the most extraordinarily beautiful place. 2 weeks sitting there in the hide, and when the Wakari monkeys turned up, a snake came in the side of it and sat on my lap, so made feeling them really awkward because I didn't know quite what it was. And so I was just sort of thinking, have I really been here for 2 weeks?
You're very good at what you do. That's why you're good, because
I tell you what, you move very, very slow when you've got snakes sitting on your lap. It just came in the height. You see, you've got your camera out the front and you've got little gaps on both sides to give yourself a little ventilation, enough of a gap to give you a little bit of air without giving you any light. And I was just thinking, I was just looking out the side of my head thinking, oh, you've got to be joking. You know, what timing? And anyway, he was sitting on my lap and was there for a while. I moved very slowly, got up to my knees, got some shots. But anyway, yeah, it was almost total disaster.
You've young children, 10 and 12. I know you've older ones as well, but are they asking you questions about what's going on in the Amazon and what's going on in the world?
Very much so. Yeah. I think they're very aware. I think this generation now are aware. It's funny, they're aware of all the big things and unaware of the small ones sometimes. Like often the natural history of our country would pass them by often, or the birds singing in the trees will pass them by, or whatever, might be able to name a flower or whatever. Never seen frogs spawn. We're talking to a little kid recently, never seen frogs spawn, didn't know what a newt was, you know. And I just think that's a real pity. I think that's a part of childhood where if you make me for Minister of Education in the morning, I would have natural history as a course on the junior, right through primary school. Mm. It's something that all kids engage in.
Bring frog spawn in schools anymore, are they?
Under licence they can. There's that idea that you shouldn't be just grabbing frog spawn and throwing it any place, but you're dealing with reasonable people. And I'd say if a school applies, said, look, can we get a bit of spawn to roast? Because it's a lovely thing to sort of do. Don't quote me on that either.
No, we'll
have to. But there is
up.
A sort of licensing thing that goes on these days.
That was the thing
days.
Of childhood, the frog spawn and the tadpoles. And then
absolutely.
I don't know what happened after that because...
Well, they turned the little frogs
and
locked
away. Where did they go?
Yeah, well, expand. They'll go away for a couple of 2 or 3 years before they come back and breed themselves, you know? And they'd have a high level of fidelity to where they were born, so there's a good chance, you know, they might well come back there.
So they've no experience. A lot of young people don't know about that stuff, but they know that the world is threatened by what we've done to it.
Yes, and they get that idea, that concept is in their head, which when you think of it 30 years ago, the idea that humans could alter the climates, that's just ridiculous. What, literally alter the wind and how strong the sun gets, how much sunlight gets through, and now we realise, yes, we can do that, and we've done it very effectively.
Inadvertently.
Yeah.
And I suppose what people are saying from my reading of the situation is that what will happen in the future is we're going to have to try and do it with purpose, like with intent. So will we really have the technology to change things back?
Yeah, and I guess it's not changing things back. Isn't it like you always go forward?
Some of it is preventative.
But you've learned the lessons and you kind of go, you know, what's so great? I mean, we are the luckiest generation that has ever lived on planet Earth in terms of the comfort of our lives, the wealth of our lives. There has never been a generation like ours that's lived in peace and prosperity for so long. But you feel, you have a sense that, you know, now the world can't just keep producing more and more. That time is going to come where it's producing enough and we just have to decide how we share it all out.
Yeah.
Because
so
there are only so many resources.
We're close to peak consumption.
We've peaked.
Everything.
Absolutely peaked.
Peak travel.
Absolutely peaked. I mean, you know, this people in 100 years' time go, what, you used to do that? Yeah. We take it for granted that everything will get easier and better and simpler for everyone. And we'll all travel, the whole world would travel.
Well, that's what we thought. Things just get better and better and better.
But they still can get better, but in a different way. I see this as a massive opportunity. A massive opportunity to rebuild our landscapes again, to develop with all those things in common. We talk about sustainable development, so let's develop sustainably. Like, we know that's what we have to do. Yeah. So let's start doing it.
But you see, it needs to be like, you know, you're at the coal face and you see what the world has to offer when it comes to nature. But you're a lone voice, say, for example, and even Greta Thunberg, and she's getting global coverage.
Yeah, wonderful girl.
But yet
to
see, you know, Donald Trump decides, oh, no, I'm not going to cooperate with the Paris Accord.
That's the problem. That's the problem. Yeah, that is. And you get a few leaders in now around the world who have no regard for the environment at all. And that's incredibly sad.
And then
it's hard to know.
Also, you have huge countries who are developing. So they're building infrastructure.
Yeah.
You know, like we have done.
Yeah.
And we can't say, oh no, you can't do that.
Yes, but not very clever to follow us, because, you know, those models, everyone will have to start developing their own economic models a little bit, because not one size, the one size fits all. I mean, everyone in Beijing having a motor car probably doesn't make sense. You know, it's just not.
But everyone in Beijing may want a
they may car. They may want one, until you get to the point, a bit like us, you go through it and then you go, actually, we could get rid of some of those and life would be better.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be nice to have more
cycling
lanes.
It's a bit like smoking. I remember, you know, because when the tobacco companies knew that, we'd cotton on to them this side of the world, they focused their attention on China and other countries.
Absolutely. I was in Indonesia a couple of years ago and they had big posters across the road saying, don't be a quitter.
Don't be a quitter.
And they're packing local fags underneath. Don't be a quitter. Yeah, and associating quitting with being, you know, a bit of a softie.
Yeah, bit of a wimp.
Don't be a quitter. Yeah, they were all, that was a poster campaign, every place. They were in English for some reason.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny and silly-wazy, but anyway.
So what are we going to do? Like, you know,
we have to be positive, and we have to think about our own country first. Because there's not an awful lot you can do sometimes about things the other side of the world, but there's an awful lot we can do to make Ireland better. And that's what some of my talk's going to be about here. We've got to be positive. We live in a very temperate, benign climate. If we want more hardwood forests, we can plant them. We know we can do that. If we want to restore the bogs that we need to do, we can do it.
Okay.
We actually know how to do that. If we want to clean our rivers, we can organise that. So all these things are solvable.
They're all doable.
There's no inevitable. Decline is not inevitable. No chance, no way.
Yeah.
No, it's not. We can do an awful lot in this country. And I have a feeling, for the first time in the last couple of years, I just feel there's something in the air.
The worm has turned.
Yeah. There's something tangible now. You can just see people, just people talking about it a lot more. There's something happening. I think people are realising we've left a lot of stuff behind and it's about time to re-engage with some of that stuff.
Well, even like the small organisation here, RTE, like I had my soup from a compostable cup today with a wooden spoon.
Yeah.
Now, you didn't get much soup onto the wooden spoon. It took me a lot longer.
Yeah, and some of these things, do they make a huge difference? Of course, on their own, not really. But however, what is important, it's that whole mindset is changing, that sense that there's finite resources are finite.
Yes.
We can't just... So even that change is a very significant one. Mm. You know, it's taken a long time.
There is that problem, though, in that, like what you said, that we were the most privileged, you didn't use the word privileged, but we were the most, you know, lucky generation. But we are the generation in power.
Yes.
And that's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, and we're the one using up all those resources so quickly. And, you know, we spend our lives thinking about how we're, you know, our kids, how they're going to be when we leave them, all that kind of thing. But the one thing we want to do is leave them something vaguely decent.
Yeah. What about, just before we leave it, what about what's going on now in nature? What can people look out for in their back gardens and when they're out for a walk?
It's a surprisingly quiet time of year in terms of birds and that sort of stuff, because a lot of birds are molting at this time of year. Molting requires a lot of energy, they tend to go really quiet. They've raised the chick now. Now they need new feathers.
Right.
So they're sitting down really quietly.
Just dropping feathers.
It's only in the last few days that I've started to hear a few little birds tweeting again. Up till 2 weeks ago, there was an utter silence.
Right.
But it's a great time of year. Lots of butterflies around right now.
Yeah.
Dragonflies and things like that. Lots of insects. Lots of flowers about. Yeah. Lots of wildflowers. All the seed heads coming out.
I thought it was a sign from some, you know, spiritual deity or something like that. When I was out running recently, I was on holidays. Nearly every day, without fail, as I ran through this particular field, a little blue butterfly
Lovely.
You know, flew off in front of me. I thought he was guiding me somewhere. I'd never seen little blue butterflies before.
Yeah, we have. We have a couple, one with the common blue and the holly blue in Ireland. Yeah, and the common blue is
relatively adults. They're not
adults. Every butterfly you see is an adult.
Oh, of course. Go,
you know what I mean? Yeah. I know it's easy. You sometimes think they'll grow, but of course they only grow when they're juvenile.
Right. So look out for the molting birds, and there's butterflies.
Well, that's why they're quite hard to see at the moment. They're the quiet. Yeah, and just generally enjoy the last flowers of the summer. And all the berries and all the fruit are coming.
Yeah.
I was picking some frockens the other day. I found some
frockens.
Bilberries, you know. There's still a few around.
They
were the original
like?
Blueberry, which if you went walking in the hills, the little bilberry bush, and they've got these lovely little blackberries.
Right.
They're wonderful to eat. They used to be a big part of our diet, you know.
Right.
But then with overgrazing, a lot of bilberry got pushed back, so there's not
See,
quite
that's
as
the problem
much around.
As well. Like, I have my berries every morning for breakfast.
Yeah.
You know, and even during the summer, none of them were from Ireland.
Yeah, yeah, and there's no reason why they couldn't be.
Yeah.
Ireland's a brilliant place for growing all sorts of things like that.
So that's going to have to change, isn't it?
I think so.
The fact that we think we can
and
have...
And to become more seasonal makes
sense.
Yes,
that's
too.
It.
Bring
every
back
food
seasonality.
Stuff every day of the year. That's not the way our ancestors
did. Not sustainable. And it's not great. You know, it makes everything... If everything's available all the time, then it's no longer special,
yeah,
you know.
Right. Yeah, the little princess who wants her birthday every day. Colin Starver-Johnson. So you're on the road all over from September 7th right through to October 23rd. And just listen to you now would make me want to go.
Ah, well, you're very good.
No, honestly. And so not only do you get the lovely voice of Colin Starver-Johnson and the vast encyclopedic knowledge of wildlife, but you get the pictures too.
There you go. Yeah, pictures are important.
And you can get all the details on Colin's website, C. Stafford-Johnson, at C. Stafford-Johnson on Facebook. Colin, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much, Ray.
We'll take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.